Let's go back. Next, what about Rachmaninoff? What are some issues that come about? I know Rachmaninoff doesn't have any beginner music.
No.
You know, all this is, you know, late intermediate to advanced?
Well, generally I'd say advanced.
Advanced, okay.
Yeah. You know, some people will maybe... I wouldn't consider it late intermediate. I really would say early advanced. In advanced, some of the preludes we certainly could do it at the early advanced. But most of these preludes and etudes and other pieces are what would be considered advanced repertoire. For younger students, and advanced students as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Rachmaninoff's textures are very thick for the most part. And so generally when I've worked with Rachmaninoff, it becomes more again, knowing what it is you want to hear.
Okay.
And voice and bring out in a thick chord of maybe as many as 8 or more notes. And so it's hearing a line that's in this very thick structure or texture and what to do with it. He also tends to have some very difficult octave passages that maybe fingering is an issue. Another thing that we think of is the pure volume, because so much is, it can be, it's not all. I have a student playing a Rachmaninoff etude right now, a high school senior.
Wow.
And... it's not one of the biggest pieces, but and it's a female, so it's getting her to get enough volume and strength with her whole upper body that is a challenge for her.
Okay.
And one final thing, again, it's the rubato that we talked about with Chopin. You know, it's finding the give and take in the music.
Okay. Actually, can we talk a little bit about teaching rubato? How would you go about, you know, introducing that concept to a student for the first time?
You know, you can do it, again, as easy as a simple 5-finger pattern.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, you wouldn't want to do it because in the very beginning, the steadiness of that beat is so important for a beginning student. But what I'm trying to say is that it can be a scale where, in fact, the student starts at a steady tempo and then starts increasing and then pulls back. I mean, one can do it with scales. One can do it with simple hand-type exercises where you find a give and a take. Singing is very important because oftentimes these lines have to be singable so that if you take too much time, you run out of breath.
Okay,
And, you know, certainly, I just had some little fourth grade students who had to include a degree of rubato, retard, and then coming back to a tempo. And certainly, we sang the lines, sometimes creating imagery. So, in fact, in a recent lesson with one of my fourth grade students, we talked about she was taking too much time.
Okay.
And it was actually a dance, and I said, "Well, your dancer is frozen, you know." And that in dance we wouldn't freeze. So sometimes it's finding some very fun ways to, or visual ways to show the give and the take. But even sometimes I do it with a hand movement where we see that the hand doesn't move constantly the same way.
Okay.
Sometimes we'll do it just merely by counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. We'll just see that with our voice we can move forward and we can pull back.
Okay. You mentioned singing, and that actually reminds me of one of the really cool things that I like about Zebra Piano is the fact that we do sing the safari intervals. And now that I'm teaching, you know, a lot of the beginners, what I'm noticing is that when I first have them do that, they're really shy about it, and they don't like to sing. But it's a funny thing. After a few weeks, they, you know, I'm like, I've seen this, seen that, and they jump right into it and sing it really well. And I even have one student that I didn't ask him. He was really shy. He didn't sing at all in the beginning. But just one day, all of a sudden, in a lesson, he was playing maybe Deep Blue Sea, one of the pieces, and he was singing the lyrics along to it. I was like, what is going on here? I never asked him to sing, you know, the pieces that he never sang before, but all of a sudden he's singing it while he's playing it. I was surprised. I just laughed, and I was like, wow, this is great.
It is, and you would see that, again, most of the beginning methods do have words that mm-hmm. that are there for the students for a number of reasons. One is to help the student with the words and the verses that are there to try to develop the character of the piece, mm-hmm. the spirit of the piece. But certainly one of the things that pianists get criticized is that we never breathe, right? and in fact, certainly learning that there in all piano music, we have to breathe. Mm-hmm. And it follows a very vocal model. And so, you know, certainly being able to hum. It also sets it more carefully in your inner ear. When okay. you can sing it, you know, which only helps our memory. Mm-hmm. And so that if you can certainly sing that melody, so with a little second grade student, one of the mm-hmm. suggestions, because this little second grader does sing.
Okay.
And is in choirs.
Yeah.
And she was having a little trouble memorizing her piece. And so one of the suggestions I gave was that she should sing the melody of her piece, because if she could sing it and it was placed inside her voice and in her head, that her memory would get better, and it helped her memory of that piece.
I think that it reminds me of the reading I did, maybe in pedagogy, that the piano instrument is a little bit different in terms of maybe singing, in that singing, you have to hear the note first before you sing the note. But piano, it's the reverse. You press the key and the sound comes out. And, you know, that makes a difference. I forget what the specific point was, but I remember that was something that I never thought about. You know, in that piano, you don't have to have the sound in your head first before you produce it. You know, you press the key and there's the sound.
Right.
So I thought that was a really interesting thing I learned.
It is. In fact, pianists have a fixed pitch all the time.
Yeah.
And oftentimes don't think about their pitches. And that is, mm-hmm. I think, an overall issue, which, again, in Celebrate Piano, why we felt ear training and getting the student to sing their pieces and do the little interval safari so that, again, the sound is in the head. Because that only helps the reading and the interpretation or expression of their pieces as they mature.
Yeah. So let's go back to rubato. What do you think is the most common problem you see when the student first learns how to do rubato?
The biggest problem is that it's too exaggerated. Like it happens too suddenly. It happens for too many beats, and as I was with the fourth grade student, it ends up having the piece almost die because it stops, and so it's over exaggeration, and so oftentimes listening to recordings of pieces is also helpful. I mean, I model in the lessons. We play together in the lessons to help mm-hmm. them feel a more natural give and take to the music. But as students advance, then certainly listening to a lot of great artists play a work so that one hears where the give and take, and it certainly provides you with a lot of different ideas.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point about rubato being give and take. Because what I've noticed with students is that they do a lot of slowdowns,
mm-hmm.
and they don't speed up. And would you say that, you know, because I've heard it, you know, taught that there should be roughly equal. If you slow down, you should have roughly the same amount of speeding up phrases. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know if I quite understand what you're asking me, okay. but certainly rubato shouldn't be predictable.
Okay.
And which is another issue that comes up, so I don't know if that's what you might be addressing, but one of the things that I find is that obviously in whether it's Chopin's music that we're talking about or any of them, there's going to be repetitions of phrases, and the student tends to do the same thing every time.
Yeah.
Or feel that in every four measures there has to be a rubato. So, which is another issue, is that sometimes then students feel that it becomes a very predictable element, and it shouldn't be predictable. It should be improvised. It should feel like it's free. And so, oftentimes another issue then is one should come back to the tempo. Mm-hmm. If that's what you're asking, but it shouldn't be something where a student knows, well, every time I hit the third measure, I have to slow down, or every time I come to a cadence, I slow down, or and then I speed up. It shouldn't be predictable.
Okay. The reason I mentioned that was actually in one of the master classes at San Diego State when we had Frank Levy in there. He described, I think, somebody played a Mozart sonata, and I've never heard it described this way before, but he described the phrases, some of them being square, and some of them being more round, circle. And this is the very first time, and I thought it just blew my mind when he demonstrated that some phrases, it actually goes ahead of the beat, and some phrases you pull back, or some phrases are exactly on the beat. And, you know, the way he did it, every time I hear great pianists, that's what I hear, is that sometimes they're ahead of the beat, they're ahead of the orchestra or something. And you know, sometimes they pull back, and sometimes they're right on the beat. And that was something really huge that I learned from the masterclass of Frank Levy.
Yeah, in fact, and that goes back to the fact that it's not predictable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That certainly there are phrases, and I'm trying to remember if I was present during that particular part of that master class, but the obviously some phrases are more the final cadential type pattern where you want it to be a little bit more square, whereas in the middle maybe there's a phrase that's leading to another that might be one of the more round ones where the breathing and the time is going to be a little bit different than the initial exclamation of a particular theme or the closing. Mm-hmm. And so again, each artist and each teacher, each student has to, again, it can't be predictable, but that in music there are phrases that are moving forward, yes, to the next idea, and then there are some that are closing the idea.
Now, going back to the predictability, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things I tell my students is rubato it's an expressive element, and that if you do the same thing every time, it is no longer expressive. It is just what
repetition,
you do.
Yeah,
you just repeat it. So if you do the same thing every time, it's not expressive anymore. So that's what I tell them.
Mm-hmm. And that's correct.
Okay.
and do we ever perform anything exactly the same way? I don't know. But certainly if we get it into our head, every time I do this, I have to play soft. But the most wonderful performances can sometimes be the surprises that come from a little time that's been taken that you weren't expecting, or a change of dynamic that came out of at an unusual place. So it can't all be the same.
Yeah,
you're right. It does be. If it's predictable, then it's a ho hum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What's another one? Kabalevsky. So there's a lot more younger repertoire for that, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what's one of the issues that come up with students?
Any of the 20th century and into the current century, it's oftentimes rhythm.
Okay.
Because these composers tended to use a greater variety of rhythmic patterns in a short amount of time. And it can also mean, when I say rhythm, it can mean changing of meter.
Okay.
Which a student should be able to do at the very earliest stages of piano study in a method. Mm-hmm. If they haven't had a particular method that's addressed that, certainly going from a 4-4 to a 3-4 back to a 4-4 can be an issue. Mm-hmm. So learning how to address those kinds of rhythms, as well as very sophisticated dotted rhythms, combinations of eighths and sixteenths can be certainly a challenge for many students. The other thing is that in the 20th century, including Kabalevsky, the composers, although it started to develop certainly with Beethoven and Chopin, but you see a greater variety of articulation markings. So whether mm-hmm. it's Kabalevsky or Bartok, we get to tenutos, we get different kinds of staccato, we get a variety of accents in the music. And oftentimes the units are not working in the same way. If I'm thinking of, they can be going over the bar lines differently than mm-hmm. They are in a traditional Beethoven or even a Chopin piece. So taking care that one looks at all those articulations can certainly be a challenge. Greater dynamic markings. There's a greater variety of dynamic markings. Yeah. So sometimes just practicing certain passages for their dynamic vitality is very important. Of course, that thing that I think most teachers and students have trouble with is just learning about the new tonalities and harmonies that we have in the mm-hmm. 20th century. But I have students, Kabalevsky can be quite tonal, so I actually have a little fifth grade boy that his Kabalevsky Clowns from Opus 27 is one of his favorites.
Okay.
And so, and it moves back and forth between A major and A minor, and he loves playing this piece because it has a great deal of character. So again, like all the pieces or all the composers, it's finding the spirit or the character that this piece is trying to project.
Okay. Cool. Okay, well, I learned a lot.
Well, good.
Okay.
It goes on, right?
Yeah.